This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650 with Marcus Fitzgerald.
Turn me up a little bit. Just what's been on my mind. That's that Northeast Groove sample right there.
Thank you, Wale. It is Basketball Central Tuesday night. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Vancouver Canucks and the home of the only basketball show on terrestrial radio in Vancouver on a rainy Tuesday as we tape this on a Tuesday afternoon. If you've been listening to the show at all, you probably know where to find us. Tuesday nights, 11 p.m., 650 in your car, the Radio Player Canada app, the Sportsnet app, HD Radio 96.9 HD3. You can also tell your smart speaker, play Sportsnet 650. You can also find me on Twitter at Marcus Fitzy. DMs, if you wish, are open. You want to talk, I'll listen. Good show ahead. Couple of breaking news items today, in fact. You always wonder where these shows are going to go in the offseason because we navigate through the dead zone still. We're about 19 days out from training camp across the NBA opening up. NBA regular season starting in just over a month. October the 19th is the date. We're at September the 14th right now, so we are getting there. But a couple of key things that we'll get to on this show. One, second segment, we'll talk about Aaron Gordon re-signing in Denver today. 4 years, $92 million, according to Sham Sharania of The Athletic. Another victory for Clutch Sports as well. Aaron Gordon, a Clutch client. He stays in Denver with Nikola Jokic, with Jamal Murray, with MPJ. We'll talk about Denver's ceiling for the coming season, where they're going to be in an always talented Western Conference. And the other story that broke today involved another star, or at least former All-Star, if you want to call him that. The latest in the "we have no use for this guy anymore, so we'll work on a deal" story in the NBA, breaking today from, again, Shams at The Athletic. John Wall and the Rockets will be parting ways at some point. Now, Wall will come to training camp, but won't be playing any more games for the Rockets this season. But here's the important thing to note about this situation. Once I took a look into it and more about this story came out, this is according to Jackson Gatlin, who covers the Rockets. He does Locked On Rockets Daily. Said on Twitter today, is reporting suggested anyway, that Wall is going to be around the team on a daily basis until they find a trade partner. Now, this isn't a situation where he's going to be persona non grata. He's not hiding out in New York like Kawhi Leonard did when he distrusted the Spurs medical staff a few years ago. He's going to stick around and mentor the young kids in Houston as that team navigates through the post-James Harden era rebuild. That's kind of where the Rockets are right now. Again, they have their backcourt of the future, and it kind of makes sense, really, because Kevin Porter Jr. took the keys for stretches late last year in Houston, had a 50-point game at one point, and also he got hurt too, but there was a stretch where he averaged 21-6-5 and showed some flashes, and looks like Houston has a keeper at the point guard spot. And then you draft Jalen Green, second overall, who we talked about on this show a few weeks back with our friend Salman Ali. Really impressive summer league, and Jalen Green could have a very impressive rookie campaign. And again, like I said, the Rockets are rebuilding as well. They're moving on from the James Harden era. They don't need an established star. The Wall thing, that was just the price to pay for unloading Russell Westbrook. And again, Wall's contract is a bit of a concern. It's got 2 years left on it at $91 million. So finding an actual trade partner is going to take some time here. This isn't a Ben Simmons situation where you're getting a young star who can still be redeemed. This is a guy in John Wall who has come back from multiple injuries, and he's shown a lot of character and a lot of heart in doing so. Played well for stretches in Houston, showed flashes of being the old John Wall, the guy who went number one overall back in 2011, a decade ago. He can still do that. Average 20 points a game in 40 games. Not the shooter, and he never has been a shooter, really. He was 40% from the floor, 31% from three. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to space the floor for you, but it was a situation in Houston where it had reached its end. You've got the young kids in place now. You don't need a guy like John Wall, you know, disrupting the timeline in Houston. The Rockets know that. John Wall knows that. So they're going to put their best foot forward and move forward with this. And when I say that, I mean that because there are reports that Wall is going to stick around and help mentor these young kids. He's going to be there in a positive way. He's not going to let this, and they're not going to let this, become a distraction. And that's kind of refreshing because there have been other situations where players have been sat down and told that, okay, we're going to work out a trade for you, but it goes sour, or the player gets a bad taste in his mouth on the way out. Kind of that, you know, we saw that in Cleveland with Andre Drummond before he got sent to the Lakers. He was sat down and didn't play and stayed away from the team. It's hard on these guys. So good on the Rockets for, you know, trying to do right by a veteran in John Wall, saying, hey, look, you know, you're not on our timeline right now. There's no real use for you, at least on the floor. But in the meantime, could you please help out these young kids? And apparently that's something that John Wall has signed off on, along with signing off on the hope that eventually he will play for a team that maybe can compete for a championship. Maybe. But here's the other thing with John Wall. Again, like I said, 2 years, $91 million left on his deal. We know now that no contract in the NBA is unmovable. Something can be done, but it's not going to be done right away. So where does he go? Where does John Wall go at this point? I think we can rule out Philadelphia. Houston wants Green and Porter to run the offense. They don't need Ben Simmons for that because it doesn't fit their timeline. Maybe you could, you know, figure something out if Daryl Morey was to circle back with the Rockets. Don't forget, Ben Simmons was connected to James Harden just a few months ago, and a deal nearly happened. Ben Simmons had people close to him telling him he was headed to Houston, and it fell through. It would make it interesting, but then what would Houston have to offer? What do they really have to offer at this point aside from Christian Wood? And even if you offered Christian Wood, is he what the Sixers would be looking for right now? I don't think so. I think what Daryl Morey's after, he's after an established star. He's hoping for Bradley Beal or even a Dame Lillard. That's like the home run, A-list, you know, top-of-the-line choice that Daryl Morey's going to swing for. I don't think he can do that, even with Ben Simmons, to send back the other way. So I think we can rule out Philadelphia in this situation for John Wall. Again, 40 games for Wall last year, 21 points and 7 assists on 40% from the floor. Does that sound like a guy who could be a piece for a legit contender? I mean, Dennis Schroeder had to leave $75 million on the table to go to Boston because the point guard market dried right up. And I mentioned 31% from three from John Wall last year. That's what he was in 40 games. He's never been a knockdown shooter. So it's not like you can play him off the ball. So it doesn't make sense that he becomes the third guard in Golden State. And with the point guard market dried up like it is, there aren't too many places where he's going to start, certainly. So he'd have to come off the bench. There are reports that John Wall has been connected, or at least teams have reached out to talk about Wall. The Clippers, the Miami Heat, even. I don't know if you're the Miami Heat, you would do something like that, how you could do that. Because the Rockets also apparently want to make sure they, quote, win this trade. That's a line out there right now, too. They want to win this trade, and that's the key word here, trade. It's not a buyout to appease John Wall so he can just get out of his contract and go play for a contender, sign for peanuts. It's not how this is going to work, apparently. Houston actually wants to move the guy. So they could move him in the next few weeks. He's going to come to training camp. He's going to be around the team. But they might have to wait a year, at least. 2 years left in this deal, $91 million. That's a big ticket. If you're the Miami Heat, you don't have the flexibility to do that. And you just brought in Kyle Lowry anyway. And you'd rather have old Kyle Lowry over old and broken down John Wall in a heartbeat. In a second, you would do it. The Clippers, maybe. Maybe. Possibly. But Reggie Jackson just gave you that great postseason. You re-sign him. Yeah, you let Rajon Rondo go, but you're not replacing Rondo with a guy who makes over $40 million for the next 2 years. Yeah, you don't want that. So I don't really see a real true contender reaching out for the services of John Wall. He's not in line for that right now, given his contract. I would see John Wall in a situation like a Detroit, mentoring Cade Cunningham. And apparently Detroit is one of the teams that's also come out here and reached out to Houston about Wall's services. I would see him in that kind of situation, maybe Detroit, maybe Cleveland, where he can continue to mentor, you know, either Cade Cunningham in Detroit or Colin Sexton in Cleveland. I think that's far more likely. I think that's far more likely. And I also think that it's basketball mortality here for John Wall. I kind of feel bad for him. Because, you know, by and large, he's been the consummate pro for 10 years. He and Bradley Beal had a couple of spats along the way, but that was about it. That's going to happen. But he's been a consummate pro, wants to hang around, wants to mentor the kids, wants to play that Jared Dudley role, if you will. that DeAndre Jordan role, if you will. The difference is you're supposed to get those guys for the minimum. You can't have those guys on contracts that have 2 years left and $90 million. So how are the Rockets going to do this, and how are they actually going to win the trade? Because you're not going to get teams that are going to give them draft picks either. That's what's staring at Houston right now. Very entertaining, very interesting to see what the Rockets do. Because, again, the Lakers had Jared Dudley and now DeAndre Jordan to be the guidance and the glue guys. But they're on minimum deals. They're on minimum deals. Who in their right minds are going to pay $90-plus million over two seasons for a mentor? I don't think that happens. So we'll have to wait this out. We'll have to see. But, you know, on the other hand, a motivated John Wall coming off a couple years where he was racked by injury. There was the Achilles. There was the knee. And then he plays 40 games in Houston. And he did. Again, he did have flashes where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's the old John Wall. Okay, I can see that. That might work. Some contender out there will remember that. And mid-season, not in the next 2 weeks, obviously, but at some point mid-season, because you're always going to get injuries. You're going to have COVID-19 concerns because the NBA is not mandating players to get vaccinated, apparently. That's another one of the stories that broke today. And we may talk about that in a little bit. But there's going to be a situation down the line mid-season where maybe a contender is suddenly thin at the guard spot. And they try to work something out. And obviously the Rockets want to win the trade, and certainly they're going to say that publicly. But there may come a time when, even if John Wall, saying and doing all the right things in Houston and being that mentor, being that leader for Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr., maybe he gets tired of that too. And maybe he starts to sour a little bit. Then it starts to become more of a distraction by about midseason, right? Or even by the end of this year. Because again, it's not like the Rockets are going anywhere. The contenders are pretty well stocked up in terms of guards. I already mentioned the point guard market. We already talked about Dennis Schroeder. John Wall knows this. We know he knows this. So it could be half a year, could be a full season. We're not sure. It's interesting, though, if John Wall gets an opportunity with a real actual contender, something he's never really had in his career, right? Sometimes you get these guys that play on teams that are just treadmill teams in the Eastern Conference, like the Wizards were for so long. And Wall was basically an ambassador for that city, carried that franchise for a while, at least until Bradley Beal came into his own. He has the ability to lead. He has the ability, that capacity to be not the best guy on a championship team, but he's got some valuable attributes to bring a contender at some point. It's not going to happen a couple of weeks from now, but it may happen, say, around midseason. So let's watch for that. This is Basketball Central, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, your home of the Canucks and your home of the only terrestrial radio basketball show in Vancouver on this rainy Tuesday, which we tape on Tuesday afternoons in Port Coquitlam. We do it every week. If you want to double back, check us out. You can find us on the website sportsnet.ca/650. Also check out Sportsnet app, Radio Player Canada app, a whole host of options to find us as we continue to do this show weekly. And we get set for the NBA season, which is 1 month and 5 days away. October the 19th, regular season gets underway. Training camp starting in about 19 days. We are just around the corner. Started the show talking about John Wall. That news broke today. Shams Charania of The Athletic. John Wall not going to be, at least on the floor, with the Houston Rockets to start the season. He'll be at training camp. He'll be there in a mentorship kind of role, but he's not going to be in a Houston uniform, as they will work on a deal. And we'll see where John Wall ends up, be it in the next few weeks, at midseason, at the end of this year. Again, 2 years left in his contract. And the Rockets say they want to get fair value out of that deal, so it is going to take some time. However, this is my favorite time of the year. It is. Maybe it's yours, too. The kids are back to school. It's not oppressively hot outside anymore. There's more fashion options because it's not oppressively hot outside anymore, but also because the NFL season is underway. You got the UEFA Champions League that started today, too. Here's the thing. The NFL knows how to manufacture drama. We just saw two incredible games in prime time. You had the Raiders-Ravens overtime classic last night, and Tom Brady against the Cowboys on Thursday, leading the late drive down the field for the game-winning points. I'm even excited for Champions League now that I'm on the Paris Saint-Germain bandwagon. They play Club Bruges tomorrow, by the way, all the way in on Messi, Mbappe, Neymar, and Marquinhos. I'm looking forward to that. So enter the NBA, which is in discussions to go with some kind of mid-season tournament, where the winning team would collect $1 million cash per player. I don't know why necessarily the league would do this. Here's the appeal of a UEFA Champions League, flawed as it may be. You see clubs face one another that you wouldn't on any other stage. PSG will play Man City from the Prem in this thing. Every NBA team plays the other at least once per season. So right away, the allure of a tournament like that is lost on a good section of your fan base and probably a good section of your players. Because look, I tell the PSG story because I am very recently, a soccer guy, okay? 2 months ago, I didn't know when the UEFA Champions League was. I didn't know when it started. I didn't know that it goes for that long. It ends at like the end of May. They drag it out forever. Like, I'm learning about this on the fly. So I was a part of, you know, that group where you grow up, you watch the NBA, the NFL, the, you know, National Hockey League. These mid-season tournaments don't make any sense. If you're a soccer person, then yes, of course you understand. That's just the thing. That's what they do. They do that in Major League Soccer as well. The Vancouver Canadiens go play, or Canadiens, Whitecaps, they go play in the Canadian League where they lose to teams on the island and it gets the manager fired. Anyway, I digress. If you're a soccer fan, you're used to this. You're used to this because that's what they do overseas, and they even do it in basketball leagues in Europe as well. It's a thing that happens. You don't have to explain it to fans in Europe, and a lot of soccer fans over here, you don't have to explain it to them either. But there is that subsection of NBA fans who are just NBA fans, or they're fans of the NBA and the NHL, or the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, and the National Football League, where mid-season tournaments don't exist. Therefore, that allure, that draw isn't there. People get excited about Champions League, and for good reason. Hell, I'm excited. I just got on this thing. Man, you played today. PSG plays tomorrow. Messi, right? You know, there's a draw. There's interest. I don't know where the NBA is going to drum up that kind of interest. How do you get people excited in an event like this that they've never seen? And clearly, they know it's all about money. Because here's what the NBA wants to do. They want to have a mid-season tournament just to kind of break the schedule up a little bit so it's not so mundane in the first half of the year. And the winner of said tournament, each player on that team is going to collect $1 million. Well, there's your problem right there. If your big draw for the players is cash, they don't care. They don't care. Not the max guys. Certainly not the max guys. Maybe you have, you know, the 14th man on a roster who's on a two-way G League deal who could use $1 million. I get that. But the LeBrons and the Stephs of the world, LeBron James doesn't care at all for the play-in tournament at the end of the year. And that was great for the NBA. It's been great for the NBA the last 2 years. LeBron doesn't care about that. And I know he has an ownership stake in Liverpool now, but do you really think he's going to care about a mid-season play-in tournament? Do you really think any of these guys are going to care about that at all? Why? Why would they? Again, there's plenty of soccer fans around the world who would embrace this format. But aside from the cash, there is literally no other way to get players to care about something like this. Obviously, the NBA is hoping they can create the buzz for something like this, comparable to what you would see in Summer League. We get excited for Summer League because it had been a couple of months since we saw basketball, live basketball. And it's in Vegas. People in Vegas who go to Vegas, they love Summer League. I think what you do is you add a draft pick for the winning team, not in the lottery necessarily, but a first-round pick, like 14th or 15th overall. Again, these guys aren't going to care about prize money for some mid-season tournament that's done purely to drum up TV ratings because it's November and people aren't really paying attention to the NBA just yet. If you want to incentivize it properly, you incentivize teams who are not going to compete for a championship, right? You incentivize them with a mid-first round draft pick. Because every year, we talk about this every year, and people who like to dump on the NBA bring up the same argument. Most of the time, they're right. There's only five or six teams who can win a championship anyway. And then after that, you have this fat middle ground where you have a bunch of treadmill teams in both the East and the West who you know that maybe they've got a star or two, but they're not going to be there at the end. They're those middle teams who win 43 games and maybe get into the playoffs and maybe make a little bit of noise, but that's their ceiling. This is to incentivize things for the treadmill teams, really, and for the NBA to make things more interesting surrounding those ball clubs, right? The Entertaining as Hell tournament, that's something that Bill Simmons coined a few years ago about a play-in. Now they do the play-in. So this is the next step for the NBA. Obviously, this wouldn't happen next year. This would have to happen the following season. Maybe you cut the regular season schedule down to 78 games or 74, an even number, and then you just incorporate the play-in tournament games on top of that, and you figure that out. But incentivization is going to be key here. You're not going to incentivize players to play in a tournament for money. They make plenty of that. If anything, you have to put some team success on it. Give them a 14th pick overall in the coming draft, because even if you're a team that's on the borderline of contention, you could still flip that pick for an asset, right? GMs will go for that. That's enough incentive right there. And also, it gives a chance for the treadmill teams and the teams that, are coming up bad seasons, like the Detroit Pistons of the world, like the Houston Rockets of the world, to play for something meaningful in the middle of the year. If it is cash, then there's got to be some bragging rights attached to it too. Every dog has to eat. And again, only six teams really contend for a championship every year. This is an opportunity for the NBA to get the also-rans involved, the treadmill teams involved, and also to generate some buzz prior to Christmas, because here's what we know for sure. For most people, the NBA season doesn't truly start till Christmas Day. That's the league showcase day, and once you get past Christmas and the football season starts to wind down, then you get a little more interest nationally. They need to find something during the football season stretch that can drum up some excitement. They've got it. They've figured it out with the play-in tournament at the end, even if the players hate it. LeBron hates it. Luka Doncic hates it. But, hey, the league loves it, and they're going to keep doing it. So, naturally, they're going to ride that heater. They're going to ride that wave and try to figure out if they can do this. Again, I don't think it's going to work, because it's not like in soccer where you're taking all these leagues independent of one another, taking all their best teams and putting them in this months-long competition that's drawn out. Again, it's not like there's a game every second day. Paris Saint-Germain's playing tomorrow, and then they don't play again until the 28th of October, or 28th of September, and then they don't play again until the 19th of October. It's drawn out. There's anticipation. There's anticipation for this stuff. That's why people love the UEFA Champions League, as I'm finding out. The NBA can't do that. It's not possible. It's not possible. It's not like you're taking a CEBL team. You're not taking the 2021 champion Edmonton Stingers and putting them in a tournament against Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. Entertaining as that may be, that's not happening. You're not seeing matchups you would otherwise never see. Every team plays the other team at least once. So how is the NBA going to figure this out where they can generate some interest and, of course, some TV revenue, because that's why this happens as well. But also, how do you incentivize the players? How do you incentivize the teams to compete? And how do you convince them that this is important? Because, again, this is North American culture right here. We're not used to mid-season tournaments. This isn't European soccer. Like I said earlier, European soccer fans, they get it. And that stuff is important. These Champions League games across the pond are important. People look forward to them. Can the NBA figure out a way to make that happen? That's the challenge that lies ahead for them. Back with a little bit more. You've got it. Basketball Central. This is the home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650.
Basketball Central continues on Sportsnet 650 with your host, Marcus Fitzgerald.
Tuesday night, Basketball Central, Marcus Fitzgerald with you on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Vancouver Canucks, the home of the only basketball show on terrestrial radio in Vancouver. You can join us from anywhere. You can find us, well, if you're in your car, you know where. 650 on your AM dial, Radio Player Canada app, Sportsnet app, also HD Radio 96.9 HD3. You can also tell your smart speaker, play Sportsnet 650. I'm Marcus Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Marcus Fitzy. First segment, in case you missed it, talked about John Wall no longer suiting up for the Houston Rockets. Those two sides will work on a deal, and it's not like Wall asked for a trade. It was just a mutual thing. Wall's going to hang around and mentor the young kids in Houston. Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, that backcourt of the present and the future is set. So John Wall's going to be there in a mentorship role, at least until they can figure something out. And like we said in the first segment I don't know that there's a lot of places that John Wall can actually go with 2 years and $90 million left in his deal, especially if Houston wants to actually recoup some value here and it's not just a buyout where they can let him walk to a contender. If that's the case, could be half a year, could be a full year before we see a deal actually done. That was one of the major breaking stories today. There were two. And the other story, also from Shams at The Athletic, because Shams breaks everything these days. The Denver Nuggets re-signing Aaron Gordon today. 4 years, $92 million. Now, at first blush, as we tape this on a Tuesday afternoon, this news broke about an hour ago. This is probably a win for Denver, because we know what Gordon is. He's an athlete that can cause problems for opposing defenses and rolling to the rim. He's an elite finisher at the rim, and that's key here because he's not a three-point shooter. Also, he gives you an active body on defense. I like this for Denver, though. They had to pay a premium for a guy like Gordon because it's hard to get stars to come to Denver. They've had to build this thing organically, and they've swung for the fences last year for Gordon to add to Nikola Jokic, to add to Jamal Murray, and to add to Michael Porter Jr. after their run to the Western Conference Finals in the bubble. You wonder what Denver's ceiling is going to be now, depending on when Murray does get back, because that injury happened in April. Will it be enough for the Nuggets to hang around in the 6-7 spot in the West until Murray gets back? It probably will. And here's the thing with this deal for Gordon and the Nuggets. Yes, Denver probably had to overpay just a touch. According to reports, about $5 million of that is in bonuses. It's about $88 million in base salary. I know they all sound like massive numbers anyway, but that's, you know, the legal jargon of it, according to Keith Smith on Twitter, who covers a lot of this stuff contract-wise. $88 million in base salary, $5 million in bonuses and that kind of thing. Here's what I like about this deal. In the NBA, everything always gets pushed to the coastal cities, to Los Angeles, to Brooklyn especially, and Miami. That's where the contenders are. That's where the guys who sign stars are. If you're a star, you want to go to one of those cities. That's generally how it works. If you're Denver, it's pretty difficult to attract big-time free agents, big-name free agents. Like I said, they've had to grow this thing from the ground up. They've had to build it through the draft, and they have been lucky in that, you know, setting aside the Murray injury for a second, because that's obviously a massive setback for that program. Murray and Jokic have grown together. They're still very young. They still, you know, have a lot of time ahead of them, and they've had a lot of success already as a pairing. They've already appeared in game sevens in the postseason. They've appeared in a Western Conference Finals. They know what it is to go that deep in the postseason. And yeah, they got, you know, taken care of in the first round of the playoffs by a very good, or second round, pardon me, by a very good Phoenix Suns team. We know that. But, you know, Murray was out. If you have Jamal Murray in that series, they give Phoenix more of a look. They probably do. This is a team that, if they bring everyone back healthy and Jamal Murray comes back, hopefully before Christmas, because, again, ACL injuries, and it happened in April, so it's going to take some time, and I'm sure they'll be very patient with Murray and very cautious. I think cautious is the word here. They're going to be very cautious with Jamal. But when he comes back, and everybody's healthy, assuming you re-sign Michael Porter Jr., who is up for a rookie extension as well. Could be 5 years, $168 million for MPJ. Now you have a situation where your core is set. You've got guys who are young, athletic. They're in their primes athletically, even though Nikola Jokic in athleticism is different compared to other players in the NBA. But Jokic is also the reigning MVP of the sport. The Nuggets have something here, and they haven't been afraid to pay for it. If MPJ comes back, there's a possibility that their starting five could cost $125 million. That would put them in line with the Lakers, with Brooklyn, and Milwaukee. Those are all championship contenders. That's what the Nuggets have. They've grown that now. They should be applauded for that. And when you have a situation like Aaron Gordon, you swing for the fences at the deadline for a player like him to be a contributing guy, not a lead guy. Obviously, Aaron Gordon is not a lead dog on a championship team, but he'd be a terrific fourth option, and that's what the Nuggets have. And yeah, I know, $92 million for a fourth option sounds like a lot, but that's what you have to do in the NBA in order to win. You have to load up. Win now. Forget about the future. We have to win now. We have to do this right now when you have the generational talents, when you have a guy like Nikola Jokic, and you also have a guy like Jamal Murray, a great perimeter scorer. And again, hopefully Jamal comes back healthy at some point this season. We don't quite know when, but hopefully he will come back fully healthy, and he'll get back to the way that he was prior to the injury and to what we saw in the bubble. quite frankly. Hopefully Jamal can get to that point. But if you're the Nuggets and you have a guy like Aaron Gordon, you can't let him walk because there's no way you're going to be able to replace him, right? There's just not. The market for that isn't out there right now. It's done. It's the dead of the offseason. We're 19 days away from training camp here. You're not going to replace Aaron Gordon. You're not. You're just not. And you've got a great opportunity in that Aaron Gordon can be your fourth best guy. If Aaron Gordon's your fourth best guy, you got a chance. You got a chance in the West. You really do. The Nuggets know that. The Nuggets know that. They laid out there and they made sure that they got this deal done. So off the top of my head, when that news broke, I thought, you know what? This is a win. This is a win for Denver. And not only that, it's a win for the fans in Denver, and it's a win for the NBA. Because for once, not everything gets pushed to Miami. Not everything gets pushed to the Lakers. Not everything gets pushed to the Nets. Hell, not even everything gets pushed to the Knicks. That's good for the sport. That's good for the sport. You have to have contenders in the middle of the country, too. Hopefully the Nuggets are that. Hopefully the Dallas Mavericks are that this season in the Western Conference. Luka's there. Makes things interesting, right? You need those contenders in the middle of the country as well. You do. You just do. It's good for the fans. It's good for the NBA. And you know what? As cliched a phrase as it is, it's a tidy piece of business for Denver as well. Because although Aaron Gordon is not a three-point shooter, he can be that Swiss Army knife that can do the little things athletically as well that can make a difference. This is a deal the Nuggets had to make, and I'm glad they got it done today. This is Basketball Central Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Marcus Fitzgerald with you as we break down what we've heard over the last few days or so. A couple of breaking news items that we talked about already on the show. John Wall and the Rockets going to find a mutual parting of the ways, an amicable breakup, if you will, something that happens more and more in the NBA. Although John Wall and the Rockets, apparently, they're going to do this the right way. They're staying together for the kids. John Wall's going to be a very expensive mentor for the Jalen Greens and the Kevin Porter Juniors of the world until they can get a deal done. Is John Wall going to go to a contender? Is there a contender out there that looks at the John Wall contract with 2 years and $90 million left on it and say, you know what, that guy can help us? He only played 40 games last year. He's come back from some catastrophic injuries. 40 games last year, 20 points a game, 7 assists on 40% from the floor. Not from three, from the floor. 31% from three. Not a knockdown shooter, never has been. If you're a contender, do you want that? That's something we talked about in the first segment. Is there a contender out there that would take on John Wall in a deal? Yeah, probably not. We also talked about that in the first segment, too. I could see a scenario where John Wall continues the mentorship role, albeit very expensively, in a place like, say, Detroit, where he can help Cade Cunningham learn the game a little bit, which would kind of be funny, because he's already doing that in Houston without actually playing now, evidently. And would the Rockets do John Wall dirty like that if he's going to be a good guy about it? Because, again, according to reports, John Wall is not actually asked to be traded. This is the Rockets saying, hey, you know what? We got these young kids. We're still going to pay your money, but we just don't need you out there. You don't fit our timeline right now, so we don't need you out there. If you can just be a good guy for a while, we'll find you a new place to go. It's happening more and more in the NBA. And I don't know if that means the Rockets, in good faith, they're going to try to send Wall to a contender because, again, which contender out there has got a $40-plus million contract to just move? There's not many. I know that, you know, contracts in the NBA are proven to be movable. There's ways to get it done. But this is going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one for John Wall and the Rockets. And we also talked about the potential to reset the show, of the NBA doing some kind of midseason tournament after this year to drum up some interest. And we talked about how, yes, I know that UEFA Champions League is underway today, you know, as we determine the best European soccer club. But that's the draw of it, right? You've got these European leagues all coming together. Teams facing other squads that they wouldn't normally see. Like in a few weeks here, you've got Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City going head-to-head. What soccer fan in the world wouldn't want to watch that? There's a draw there. There's intrigue there. I don't know where the NBA comes up with the intrigue for an event like this, because it's one thing to say, hey, PSG against Man City. Lionel Messi against Man City. Kylian Mbappe against Man City. It's hard if you're the NBA to say, hey, it's Luka Doncic against Trae Young in a tournament in the middle of the season. It's like, well, we already get that twice a year. We already get that twice a year. What's the point of this? Oh, the players get $1 million. So? You know, if you're a max guy, you don't care. Maybe if you're on a veteran's minimum or something, you'd be excited about that. Maybe if you're one of these buyout guys on a contender and you end up in this tournament and you win, maybe it'd be nice to collect another $1 million. Maybe you can go buy a boat. Maybe you go buy a car. Buy a boat and name it after the midseason tournament. You could be like that. Be like Ryan Kesler, right? We heard that story. Ryan Kesler talked about the offer sheet that he had in Philadelphia with the Flyers. Canucks, you know, ultimately kept him. Ryan Kesler buys a boat thanks to the raise he gets, and he named it offer sheet. Maybe you do that if you're an NBA player. Maybe. But where's the intrigue? Where's the interest? The NBA is trying to generate it, but there isn't decades and generations that are behind this. And I know the Champions League is flawed, but there's excitement. I'm excited. I'm a soccer guy now. I'm looking forward to this. I wouldn't be looking forward to a midseason tournament in the NBA. Why? Why? If we know it's a gimmick, why are we doing this? At least with the play-in tournament at the end of the year, you're taking playoff contenders and you're making them fight for it. You're basically the Joker in the Batman movie when he throws the pool cue down and tells everybody, okay, one of you is going to come away with this. Right? That's what the NBA is doing. They're throwing the pool cue in the middle of the table and saying basically only one team is going to emerge from this. That's exciting. That works. That gets people to tune in. I don't know that you can do that mid-season, and I certainly don't think you can do it in the middle of November, which is probably when the NBA would want to do something like this, because again, as we all know, the NBA season for a lot of people, officially doesn't start until Christmas. That's what the league is trying to do. But they have to incentivize it properly. Yeah, you can give the players $1 million each if they win. Okay. But I think what you want to do is you want to try to incentivize it where one of these treadmill teams who are not championship contenders, but they don't stink either, if you put a just past the lottery draft pick on the table, maybe there's something to play for. But even then, that only appeals to the GMs. It only appeals to the GMs because it's a tradable asset down the line. If you're actually in the room, if you're actually playing for one of these teams, you can't be incentivized by that because then it's like, oh, okay, we won this tournament, and with the draft pick we just got, maybe the team will pick somebody to take my spot, right? You can't incentivize the players that way. I appreciate the NBA for trying to do some new things, and I heard that, you know, they had initially planned to do this for this coming season because it is the 75th anniversary of the league. They had wanted to do that for this year, but the pandemic had thrown that kind of off the table for now. I understand why they want to generate some interest. It's their job to generate interest and buzz and then ultimately revenue. I'm sure it's for TV money, right? A little extra TV cash. Never hurt anybody, especially after all the money they lost a couple years ago. But there's some things that should be left kind of to the experts. And I know that sounds funny for anybody who's listening to this and you're a soccer fan. You say, Mark, because the Champions League is flawed too. I know that. I know that. But people are into it. And again, you see matchups that you wouldn't normally see. I can watch Trae against Luka twice a year, right? The Lakers are going to play the Suns 5-6 times this year. Why would I get excited to watch those two teams in some kind of gimmicky tournament? What's the appeal there? Oh, it's Steph against LeBron. Well, so what? I see that 4 or 5 times anyway. Sell me on something else. The NBA is trying, but they're not quite getting it here. I think they've already struck gold with the play-in tournament at the end of the season. Again, even if the players hate it, they've struck gold there, and right now they're trying to build on that. Okay, we struck gold. We got to find more gold now. Got to find more gold. Now what are we going to do? Oh, I know. We'll have some gimmick in the middle of the season. It'll be like UEFA Champions League. Okay. But if you're going to do that with a North American audience, and again, lots of European players and the NBA players from overseas, players who understand the format, the setup of Champions League and what have you, but it's a North American sports mentality. You have to sell that to people who might not be soccer fans. And I was not a soccer fan as recently as about 6 months ago. So trying to figure out this midseason tournament thing 6 months ago certainly didn't make any sense to me then. Makes a little more sense now. I know what they're trying to do, but I didn't get it then. You have to sell it to those people, and that's going to be a challenge. because we're used to watching the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, Major League Baseball. You play your regular season, you play your playoffs, you win your one championship, and that's it. That's it. There's no gimmicky league. There's no gimmicky tournament in the middle. You don't get out of league play for 2 weeks to go play in something else. I had to figure that out the hard way when the Whitecaps got started here 10 years ago. Oh, there's a Canadian championship? Oh, I had no idea. That was weird to me. I wasn't a soccer guy. You got to sell that to those people. And even if you do sell it to them, are they still going to watch? Right? We're conditioned to know certain things. And when it comes to North American sports, there generally isn't midseason tournaments in some other format or fashion. We just don't see it. We just don't see it. So the NBA has got its work cut out for it. Again, I know they're happy with the play-in tournament. They want to keep it. Adam Silver has said as much. But it's going to take a little extra work to get this play-in tournament, this mid-season tournament off the ground. They'll have a year to iron it out here. Let's be honest here, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. They're going to have a year and a bit here to iron this out. But you better make it fun. You better incentivize it somehow. And not just, oh, we pay the players. Cool. But how are you going to get us to tune in? That's the question. Just about done here, Basketball Central on a Tuesday night. Marcus Fitzgerald on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks. Couple more things before we leave you. The Lakers and Nets continuing to get old for our amusement. The Lakers a little more surprising. They let Marc Gasol go last week. They traded him to the Grizzlies so Memphis can work out a deal to let him go back to Spain, and he can play out his career there on home soil, and quite frankly do right by one of the best players in Memphis's franchise history. Bill Orem covers the Lakers for The Athletic. He reported this week that the Lakers bringing in Andre Drummond and essentially promising him Gasol's starting spot was something that Big Spain never really got over, despite saying all the right things publicly at the time. Now, the Drummond move didn't make sense at the time, and it showed in the postseason. Gasol can space the floor. He's a prideful on-ball defender, and he's one of the smartest players in the NBA. He probably would have been perfect in a staggered bench unit with Russell Westbrook. He would have been perfect for that. But we just spent the first segment talking about John Wall in Houston. The Rockets value him, and now they'll work with him on a deal. This is on the Lakers and Rob Pelinka for thinking that Andre Drummond made them better last year. This is also on Gasol a little bit, too. For everything that he can still be, he did decline over the last two seasons, too. Prideful guy, but he was on the decline. And you could point out spots where he wasn't nearly as effective. That's why managing people is so important. Because Marc Gasol right now, again, 36 years old, the Lakers, oldest team in the NBA by a country mile. He's 36, but he could have helped this year. He could have helped that team, could have spaced the floor, could have hit some open jump shots. Still a good, as I said, on-ball defender, prideful on-ball defender, can rebound, still has size. Can't teach size, can't teach height. He's got that too. And Gasol playing the five in a starting lineup means that Anthony Davis doesn't have to play the five, which for whatever reason he doesn't like to do. Instead, now you're the Lakers, you're Rob Pelinka, the centers you have in your roster, Dwight Howard, which obviously worked with Anthony Davis for a while, and DeAndre Jordan, who they brought in just a few days ago after he was bought out by the Detroit Pistons. Curious fit for the Lakers, DeAndre Jordan, when you consider, again, they'll carry both DJ and Dwight Howard on the roster. But it's actually quite simple. Rob Pelinka is in a position where he can try to recreate the title team of still less than a calendar year ago. Dwight's back, Rajon Rondo's back, and now you have DeAndre Jordan in the JaVale McGee role, even if DJ can't give you much of anything anymore. But he's going to be a McGee type. Might not have the same energy, but he's going to rim run a little bit. He'll catch a few lobs. He might grab a few rebounds, block one shot or two. That's it. Basically, DJ is the new Jared Dudley, a glue guy in the room who's fun to go out and party with, but he'll throw an arm around you if things aren't going well. That's the whole reason he was in Brooklyn with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving the last two seasons in the first place. That was the tax, the DJ tax, because he's a good guy to have around. The Lakers are buying in on that, because I'll say this again with Gasol. He was rightfully disappointed that the Lakers made all those promises to Andre Drummond, who is clearly not the player Marc Gasol is in terms of what he brings to that offense and that roster. Drummond's not the player that Gasol is, but the Lakers went out of their way to promise Drummond this, this, that, and the other. And Gasol got booted down the rotation. And again, I know he said all the right things publicly, but was it worth it? Was it worth it? Now you have DeAndre Jordan, who's barely going to play. Now you're relying on Dwight Howard to be your only true center, a guy who you couldn't play down the stretch a year ago in the bubble. You couldn't play JaVale McGee down the stretch a year ago in the bubble, but this is where Rob Pelinka steps in and says, ah, but guess what? That formula worked. All Rob Pelinka is trying to do, he's trying to take the 2020 roster, subtract a little defense, and add a little more shooting. That's it. That's all they're doing. And you know what? It might work. But unfortunately, Rob Pelinka, for others anyway, unfortunately, Rob Pelinka is in a position where he can flash that championship ring and say, hey, this formula worked less than a full calendar year ago, so I'm betting it'll work again. Yeah, they lost a little bit on defense. Alex Caruso's gone. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was gone. Kyle Kuzma, when he wanted to, could play decent on-ball defense. And you're bringing in guys like Carmelo, like Trevor Ariza, like Wayne Ellington, like Kendrick Nunn, like Malik Monk. Guys who can shoot, can't defend, though. You're going to have issues there. But again, you're Rob Pelinka. You flash the championship ring and go, hey, I'm taking last year's formula, less than a calendar year ago, and I'm going to try to run it back with more shooting. We'll see if it works. The Lakers won that title in part A, yes, of course, because of LeBron and AD, but also because Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Alex Caruso, those guys shot really well in the bubble. They did not do that in the first round against the Phoenix Suns. That's why they went home early. AD goes down, yeah, it's a problem. LeBron is hobbled, yeah, it's a problem. But now you're asking KCP to make an open shot, and he can't hit it. You're asking Alex Caruso to hit an open shot. Can't do it. Kyle Kuzma, can't do it. Rob Pelinka went out and got guys who he thinks can do that in that situation. They're running it back, just slightly different, even if they totally could have used Marc Gasol this season. We'll end on that note. This has been Basketball Central. We do this Tuesday nights on Sportsnet 650. I'm Marcus Fitzgerald. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll do it again in a week. Take care. All the best.